Kansas presents Words from Mamiya 2, an evening of spoken word, hip-hop, and music from Mamiya Abu-Jamal. Wednesday, July 16th, 7 to 9 p.m. at the New Eureka Poets Cafe, 236 East 3rd Street between Avenues B and C. All proceeds will go towards Mamiya's legal and political defense, featuring poets Jessica Caramore, Sharif Simmons, Tracy Morris, Reggie Kabiko, Ann Elliott, Carl Hancock Rux, Sandra Maria Estevez, Sonia Son, groups, universes from the Bronx side, members of Nonfiction and the Arsonists, and others. That's Wednesday, July 16th at the New Eureka Poets Cafe. For more information, please call 212-505-8183. That's 212-505-8183. This has been a public service announcement on behalf of Refuse and Resist, a nonprofit organization.
Okay, and this is radio station WBAI in New York, where the time is just about 8 o'clock on a Tuesday night. It's time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself off shaving, now I can't make a call. Couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. So they live on for the best effects of words. I hope that's understood, but they live on.
The Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein with Fiber Optic all the way on the other side of the studio.
Hi.
How you doing?
All the way on the other side.
How you doing? Haven't yet seen you today, but sound okay. It's been a busy week. It's been a fun week. It's been a, I guess, an historic week. Communications Decency Act pounded into the ground by the Supreme Court. Not unanimous, though.
No.
Surprisingly enough, not unanimous, but momentous nonetheless. Tremendous waste of time, the whole thing was. We knew it wouldn't last. We knew it wouldn't, you know, be passed into law forever. At some point, somebody was going to say, hey, you know, this stinks. This is unconstitutional. This is sort of not what this country's all about. Fortunately, it was sooner rather than later. Even so, it was a long time for a lot of people. But it's history now, although I'm told that there will be other attempts. Don't these things always come back? Like, you know, the clipper chip?
Well, this defeat certainly came at a cost.
Yeah.
We had to give back Hong Kong.
I read about that. What, the Chinese went in and took back Hong Kong? What a bold, defiant move that was.
The end of 156 years.
Surprised everybody. Just overnight, they just came in and did it. And, you know, we're just sitting back doing nothing about it. You know, we're just like business as usual. That's the difference between the country of today and the country of our glory period, which was the 1950s, back when subversives were labeled as such and put away.
I thought it was kind of funny that China was trying to woo Taiwan.
Yeah, what's that all about?
Apparently
they consider them a renegade province, and
yeah.
They want to sort of rein them in, you know?
Right.
I don't think they're going to go for that in Taiwan.
Yeah.
Although I was reading some interesting things about Shanghai and what they're hoping to do as far as overtaking not only Hong Kong. They want to overtake the United States.
Hmm.
You know, they want to become, I guess, competition, which is fine, I suppose. But anyway, getting back to the CDA, because we really sort of veered off topic there. According to Audrey Krauss from IGC, representing a group called NetAction. NetAction applauded today's, of course it's not today, but I'm reading it as if it were, applauded today's U.S. Supreme Court decision rejecting the Communications Decency Act as unconstitutional, but cautioned free speech advocates not to become complacent. This is not the end of it. Local libraries are increasingly coming under attack by the Christian right for providing internet access to citizens in their communities. While today's Supreme Court victory and similar decisions issued recently by state courts in New York and Georgia, in New York it was also turned back, the state version of the CDA was turned back, they may put a halt to direct attempts to censor internet content, but indirect attacks are likely to increase. Instead of demanding that internet access be banned outright, would-be censors are now pressuring local public libraries to add filtering software to computers that allow library patrons to go online. These filters are a far more insidious form of censorship. In addition to banning access to pornographic websites, most of the filtering software on the market today bans access to sites with information about AIDS and safe sex practices, birth control, and sexuality. Some even ban sites containing political speech, such as the site hosted by the National Organization for Women. Many of the proponents of filtering software are intent on denying citizens access to ideas and values that differ from their own. It is unfortunate that the debate over internet censorship was framed around the issue of access to pornography. What is really at issue is whether the Christian right can impose its values on all citizens in cyberspace. This will become more apparent as the censorship debate moves from legislative arena to the local libraries serving our communities. You know, it's the local issues that really frighten me, because that's where the real power is. If you read Charles Platt's book, Anarchy Online, which came out late last year, that point is stressed over and over again, and I think very emphatically. It's not the feds so much. I mean, yeah, the feds can really, you know, muck things up quite a bit, but it's the states. It's the local municipalities that come up with the most bizarre laws and are able to enforce them. And you just got to watch out for that kind of thing. Everyone has to be vigilant. So, no, it's not over. It's definitely not over. This kind of thing is just going to continue as long as there are people that want to take away freedom of speech in any form. I don't know what's up with those people, you know? Why are they so afraid of things? They must not be standing on very steady ground to start with. So that's a deal with the Communications Decency Act. Let's talk about a couple other issues in the news. Did you see the headline in the New York Times? This was yesterday. I can't believe this is the New York Times. Swipes gain on plunks as MetroCard takes off. What is this? Some swipes gain on plunks. They're talking about the MetroCard gaining popularity. After more than 2 years of being largely shunned by New York City commuters, the MetroCard is finally replacing the token as the currency of choice for many mass transit riders, with its use doubling in the last 6 months. We've got seven people in the studio right now. I'd like to see a show of hands for the number of people that have a MetroCard on them right now. 1, 2, 3, 4, and me, 5. 5 out of 7. How many people have tokens on them, too? 2 people. And you, Fiber, have neither.
I don't ride the bus or the subway.
Okay, well, that's... I was in a bus. Yeah, the MetroCard Gold.
Wow.
Yeah, it's got a higher credit line.
Gosh.
Well, kind of down a lower interest rate. supposedly, they're they're going to be allowing you to make phone calls on them, too. MCI is entering some sort of a deal with them that might start as early as October of this year. I don't know how it's going to work, but they want the MetroCard to become more of a supercard that can do just about anything.
Great.
But, you know, it still can't do what I wanted to do last week, which was, you know, swipe through the tokens so I can get onto the damn train. You know, sometimes, I guess if you keep them in your pocket, they sort of, like, wear off a little bit, and that can be a real problem, especially since, and I've seen this happen to more than one person, where, you know, they throw out the card that's, like, worth something, and they keep the one that's worth nothing, because you can't tell the difference. On the card, it doesn't say how much it is. You know, like the Washington, D.C. Metro, or the BART system, you know how much value is on the card, because it prints it out. And I think that's a very nice thing to have. I don't know who was thinking, when they came up with this system, that we don't need to know how much the cards are worth in our pockets. It's, you know, it's a very basic thing. I don't know how they would do it.
Well, if it's
going to
print on it, you can't swipe them anymore.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's sort of, I guess, a flaw with, you know, the system, the way they designed this particular system. But, I don't know. I'm sure there's a way to modify it so that they can do things like that. I use it in a bus. I don't ride buses very often. Don't like buses. Something about them. But it's totally different. When you put it in a bus, it sucks it in.
Yeah.
And it goes kerchunk somewhere. I guess it does something with that little hole in the card, which is for buses.
Hmm.
And then it just gives it back to you, and it displays on the little card or the little reader thing in front of the bus for everybody to see how much is left on your card.
Wow.
And then you're told to go on your way.
So but much starting, for privacy.
Starting July 4th, these things will be allowed to be used for free transfers between buses and subways. Does that maybe tempt you to start using the mass transit system again?
No. It doesn't.
What would it take? What would it take to bring you back underground?
It would have to smell a whole lot better.
Ah, smell. That's what drives you out.
See, they can't give me... If they had scratch and sniff Metro cards, I could just scratch them and hold them up to my nose while I walk around in the subway.
Yeah, I guess that's something to consider. City Fathers listening out there. Nearly one out of every three subway trips are now paid for with the electronic fare card, or so they hope, anyway. Metropolitan Transit. Yeah, we'll be talking about this at Beyond Hope. We'll be talking about hacking the Metro card and what kinds of things are going on in that department. Metropolitan Transportation Authority officials expect this popularity to increase even more sharply beginning on Friday, when riders can start using the card to make free transfers between subways and buses. For New Yorkers, their grudging acceptance of the card represents something of a cultural change, as tokens have been an urban necessity since they replaced dimes as subway currency back in 1953. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Now, instead of searching for tokens or a bus change every morning, many riders are instead left to wonder whether their MetroCards have enough money programmed into them for the day's commuting. It's easier to carry than the tokens, said Grant Miller, a real estate broker, who is one of the recent converts, and now with the free transfer, that's the best thing that's happened in years. I think Grant Miller needs to
get
some fun in his life there. But apart from that, the surge in the MetroCards use has resulted in part from the fact that all 468 subway stations now accept it. It's a real pain when you had something that wasn't any good at certain stations. For transit officials, the change in the card's fortune comes as a huge relief, as many earlier efforts to encourage commuters to embrace it fell flat. Riders, it turned out, wanted incentives to use the card and were resistant to buying something that could not be used at all subway stations. I think it's an historic moment, said Christopher Boylan, the MTA's deputy executive director. We're actually making good on what really over the last two or three decades has been a promise. In a further promotion of the MetroCard starting in January, riders will be able to buy 11 trips for the price of 10. The first volume discount the system has ever offered. Mr. Boylan said criticism that the card was faltering had been premature because many incentives could not be offered until the whole subway and bus system was outfitted to accept it. Still, transit advocates said that for too long, officials had failed to promote the card adequately and had assumed that the card was so convenient that people would naturally switch to the new technology. And for a long time, it had been difficult to buy the card. Something particularly true for elderly bus riders who were reluctant to go down into the subway stations where the card was mostly available. But more recently, the card has become available at grocery stores, and special vans were dispatched across the city to sell the cards to elderly riders. Special vans.
They just sit around on corners.
Apparently. I don't know. Sell cards to the elderly. When the discounts take effect in January, New York will become the last major city in the country to have offered such incentives. either through a monthly pass or through the purchase of multiple fares. The discount to be offered, however, is still smaller than those available to riders in other cities. I think it's a good start, though. You know, I think they need to do a lot more. I got to make the system just a little bit better. And plus, you know, the cards expire. They wear out. They break. You know, they're brittle. They don't feel comfortable.
Well, BART and DC Metro are made out of paper.
Yeah, but somehow they last better. I don't know how, but they do. I guess, you know, you exchange it more. I think it automatically, like, replaces your card when you upgrade it. It gives you a new card.
Really?
It doesn't keep giving you the same old card. Whereas MetroCard, you can keep going back and giving it to the token booth person, who won't be called a token booth person anymore, and they keep adding money to it. But it's amazing, you know, how confused they are. I mean, go out to a token booth person and ask them for a certain amount on your MetroCard, and you get stunned silence, you get stares, sometimes even worse than that.
Now, why would they even need those people anymore? Can't you just go up to a machine and buy the thing?
Except the machines I've seen are only machines that sell tokens, not machines that sell MetroCards. But I imagine that's in the works, too.
Yeah.
Because downsizing and firing people is just the way of the 90s, and I'm sure it's no exception in the Transit Authority. Okay, you've got something on Microsoft, I believe.
Yeah, actually, I have two things on Microsoft.
What are those clowns up to now?
Well, one thing is kind of funny, and the other thing is horrifyingly scary.
Okay.
Which one do you want first? The good news or the bad news?
Let's laugh a little bit, then we'll get scared.
Okay.
All right.
The good news is that twice in the past 2 weeks, on June 20th and June 30th, Microsoft's very own website was broken into.
No.
Actually, it was attacked. It wasn't technically broken into. It was attacked with a denial-of-service attack.
Oh, really?
Yeah, twice.
Wow. And, was it the one we printed last year?
They don't specify what exactly the people did, but, you know, it's really take your pick.
Okay.
You know, obviously they exploit
Microsoft
many.
How could Microsoft be vulnerable to something like that?
Well,
they're Microsoft.
Yeah. What are you going to do? You know, of course they claim that we're fixing this and fixes are in the works and yeah, the usual crap.
Yeah.
the scary thing is that Microsoft wants to put their horrible technology in your automobile.
What? I mean, my car?
Yeah,
is my name there?
Everyone's.
Okay.
Starting with Ford and Mercedes-Benz. But,
All right.
What they want to do is...
This is the scary part, right?
Yeah, this is the scary one.
All right.
They're calling it the Apollo Project. I'm not exactly sure why. Never was really able to figure out their naming scheme for projects. But, what they want to do is put a computer that will allow you to read your mail and surf the web.
Wait a minute. Have we been reading the same newspapers? Haven't they said that cellular phones cause more accidents than drunk drivers?
Yeah.
And now they want to be able to surf the web while they're driving?
Yeah.
Are these people insane?
Obviously.
I mean, what we must be misreading this. What do they really mean?
Reading this properly.
They expect people to surf the web while they're driving.
Yeah.
And read their mail.
Yeah. That's what they're saying. Microsoft declined to comment.
Yeah, I would decline to comment, too. That's a boneheaded idea of the century.
They claim that they have a policy of not discussing future projects.
Especially bad ideas that are liable to cause them all kinds of grief.
Yeah, but this article does go on to mention a number of successful GPS systems with maps and things.
Oh, that's different if you lost.
They're not being made by Microsoft. Made by people like Philips that have brains.
Okay.
But,
has this been roundly condemned by, like, people with brains?
I don't know if it's been condemned. The author of this article, he did choose to point out the fact that cellular phone owners, rather, do have a higher incident of traffic accidents.
That is,
another dumb idea from the people at Microsoft.
Oh, my webpage is being hacked. I didn't see him. I swear, Your Honor. I was trying to patch it at the time, and it just came out of nowhere. Okay, sure. Well, you might have heard of the deal between AT&T and SBC. SBC being SBC Communications, which
used to be SWBT.
Used to be SWBT, which used to stand for Southwestern
Bell Telephone,
which at one point was part of the Bell system.
Right.
And it wanted to become part of AT&T yet again. But apparently that's not going to happen. On Friday, the nation's largest telephone company suspended negotiations to merge with SBC Communications. Talks that AT&T never formally acknowledged though they consumed the company's top executives and drew fierce fire from Washington regulators. Now AT&T must regroup and fashion a strategy to compete on its own in a deregulated market. Poor AT&T, all by itself.
Oh, yeah.
What are they going to do without a local telephone company? But by entering into talks with SBC, analysts and industry executives said AT&T acknowledged it cannot do it alone. According to Daniel Rheingold, a Merrill Lynch analyst, he said this was a Hail Mary pass. Do you know what that is?
It's some sort of football term.
AT&T was attempting... they were attempting to declare peace on one front so it could defend all its other fronts. Whatever. But the point of this is that there will be no merger. And I think that's a good thing. I mean, the 9X by Atlantic is bad enough.
Yeah.
And I'm still not sure 100% that's going to happen. There's still a little bit of doubt in the air. I don't think it's been...
I'm surprised AT&T just didn't go after GTE. They're the biggest local phone company.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know if GTE would be too up for merging with AT&T.
Probably not. They have a really bad history.
Oh, yeah. And they want to maintain that, I'm sure.
Being that I believe it was employees of AT&T that left AT&T to start GTE.
Is that really true?
I believe so.
Oh, that's interesting.
Okay. I could be wrong, and one of the listeners could correct us.
I'm sure I know which listener will call in to confirm or deny that fact. But all right, we have a couple of things that I think are really relevant and scary and deserve to be consumed by our complete focus. And they concern sentencing guidelines. Well, actually, not sentencing guidelines, the actual sentencing concerning supervised release. Can you perhaps explain what supervised release is, since you are, in fact, on supervised release?
I think kind of makes me an expert at
don't
it.
Don't violate anything by telling us.
No, not at all.
All right.
Supervised release, which is also known as supervised probation.
Listen up, kids.
Yeah, listen up, because one day you might be on supervised release.
Yes. In fact, it's one out of, 10 Americans now?
One of every 10 Americans
is in prison or on supervised release right now, I think. 1 in 10. So look around.
Or is it has been in prison at one time?
I think it's currently. I think you're currently on some sort of a program, or you're behind some kind of a wall.
Okay.
That's, 1.5 million prisoners in the country.
Right.
So do the math. I don't know.
supervised release is similar to, it's not similar. It's the same thing as saying supervised probation.
Okay.
You're on probation with all the rights and privileges thereof, only you're under supervision, which basically means that... subject to the terms of your probation, you'll at least have to deal with certain things like having to report to a probation officer on a regular basis,
mm-hmm.
having to fill out monthly reports stating where you're currently employed, how much money you've made, and whether you've been in contact with any felons or used a firearm or all kinds of...
Killed anybody.
Yeah, well, that kind of stuff. Questioned by a law enforcement agent.
Uh-huh.
Fill one of those out every month.
You have to give them fluids and things?
What's that?
You have to give them fluids?
No. Usually they do that when you first start on probation, then they tend to taper off. If your case was drug related, then they will continue to do it probably for the entire term of supervised release. But other things like needing a special permission to travel out of state,
mm-hmm.
and so on and so forth. Of course, there can be extra terms of supervised release tacked on top of that.
Yeah, and that's...
Those are the default ones.
That's sort of what we're going to be getting into today, because it concerns the Kevin Mitnick story. It also concerns another story as well. But I'd like to read this letter that we got back in May from somebody a lot of hackers will know as Minor Threat. His real name is Chris Lamprecht, and he's been in prison since 1995. He was sentenced to 70 months in federal prison. That's a long time, 70 months. And... I'll read this letter. On May 5th, 1995, I was sentenced to 70 months in federal prison. The judge ordered that upon my release, I shall not use the Internet or any other computer network. I became the first person to be banned from the Internet. Additionally, the judge prohibited me from getting a job as a computer programmer, which has been my hobby since age 9, and my career throughout high school and college. If I violate his conditions, I could be sent back to prison. Although hacking was a hobby of mine for several years, I have never had a hacking-related criminal charge. And my current crime has nothing to do with computer programming or the Internet. I admit that I have committed undisputed crimes involving theft and sale of telephone equipment stolen from Southwestern Bell. And for this, I will spend 5 years in prison as punishment. But banning me from the Internet and from programming computers when I am out of prison is unjust and will not help foster my rehabilitation into society. So on April 22, 1997, I filed a federal habeas corpus petition challenging my internet ban on First Amendment and other grounds. I claim that banning me from the internet is a free speech violation in light of recent cases like ACLU versus Reno, which was just resolved with the CDA rejection. The government has been ordered to respond to my petition by July 11th. If I do not win in the district court, I will appeal to the U.S. Court of Appeals and, if necessary, to the United States Supreme Court. I'm writing this letter for two reasons. I need to find an interested lawyer to help me fight my computer restrictions pro bono. And two, I want to publicize what the government is doing with this absurd internet ban restriction as a free speech violation. While I may be the first person banned from the net, I won't be the last. Recently, I learned through the Freedom of Information Act that the Department of Justice and the Parole Commission plan to add restrictions to ban parolees from the internet and to prohibit parolees from using or possessing encryption software like PGP or even PKZip, since it has an encryption option. If you're interested in helping or want more information, visit this website, www.paranoia.com. Paranoia is spelled P-A-R-A-N-O-I-A. Follow that with /M-threat, as in minor threat, on the web. And to contact me in prison, write to this address. And I urge people to do this because people in prison definitely need to hear from us. His name is Chris Lamprecht, L-A-M-P-R-E-C-H-T. His prison number, 61153-080, Houston Unit, P.O. Box 1010, Bastrop, that's spelled B-A-S-T-R-O-P, Texas, 78602-1010. Now, it's interesting because this letter came in back in May, and about a week or so ago, we had, actually it was a week ago, that we had Kevin Mitnick officially being sentenced for the crimes that he committed, he pleaded guilty to, which was possession of an access device, which could be anything, could be a password, could be a cellular identification number, could be almost anything, and to violation of supervised release of a previous sort, which, if you look at the case, it's really absurd what they charged him with in that regard, because it was totally unclear whether or not he was ever notified that he was in violation of anything, and it's they had no proof. But, you know, a plea bargain is a plea bargain, and you sometimes have to plead to things like this. So those are two small counts. Keep in mind, he's still facing charges from last August, where he's being charged with all kinds of phenomenal things for copying files that allegedly are worth millions of dollars and getting the Associated Press to say that he engaged in a multi-million dollar online spree of crime. That hasn't even come up yet. So this is after that is resolved. This is what he will be facing for the two really minor things that he got charged with. Now listen to this, and keep this in mind as we remember the letter we just heard. This is what his sentencing is for those two crimes. The defendant, in addition to the 22 months in prison that he has already served, this is what happens after he gets out of prison. The defendant shall not possess or use for any purpose the following. One, any computer hardware equipment, any computer software programs, any modems, any computer-related peripherals or software, support equipment, any portable laptop computers, personal information assistants, and derivatives, any cellular phone, any television, any instruments of communications equipped with online internet, World Wide Web, or other computer network access, any other electronic equipment presently available or new technology that becomes available that can be converted to or has as its function the ability to act as a computer system or to access a computer system, computer network, or telecommunications network, except defendant may possess a landline telephone. Number two, the defendant shall not be employed or perform services for any entity engaged in the computer, computer software, or telecommunications business, and shall not be employed in any capacity while he will have access to computers or computer-related equipment or software. Yeah, good luck. I don't know, where are you going to find a job that doesn't have... He can be a garbage collector or something, although there's probably something... I'm sorry?
Might run into a computer in the trash.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, boy. Number three, the defendant shall not access computers, computer networks, or other forms of wireless communications himself or through third parties. Number four, the defendant shall not act as a consultant or advisor to individuals or groups engaged in any computer-related activity. Number five, the defendant shall not acquire or possess any computer codes, including computer passwords, cellular phone access codes, or other access devices that enable the defendant to use, acquire, exchange, or alter information in a computer or telecommunications database system. Number six, the defendant shall not use or possess any data encryption device, program, or technique for computers or any other purpose. There it is, right there. No encryption allowed. Illegal. Number seven, the defendant shall not alter or possess any telephone, shall not alter or possess any altered telephone, telephone equipment, or any other communications-related equipment. Number eight, the defendant shall not use any telephone or telephone-related equipment for purposes other than to speak directly to another person. That means he can't have voicemail, he can't call his answering machine to check on it, he can't do anything involving entering touchtones, he has to only make phone calls.
Does that mean that he can't talk to someone on someone else's three-way?
I guess technically, no. He can only make phone calls to talk directly to another person, and he shall only use his true name and not use any alias or other false identity. Now, there's two things that the court did not grant that the government wanted, and this is kind of interesting in itself. These are the things that he was able to appeal. The defendant shall not communicate to or receive from any person or persons any instructions or information relating to the access, programming, or the use of computer systems, computer networks, or telecommunications systems or devices. Okay, he is allowed to do that much. The defendant shall not participate in any conference, meeting, seminar, class, or discussion relating to computer hacking, the unauthorized access of telecommunication systems, or computer networks, or security issues with respect to such systems or networks. So that was clearly a freedom of speech issue, which the court did not allow the government to have.
Yeah, but didn't one of the other rules say that he couldn't consult?
Yeah, now that's just it. They sort of got it in a different manner. He can't act as a consultant or advisor, so that has
right.
to be defined in itself as to just what that means. To individuals or groups engaged in any computer-related activity, we could ask him, well, what kind of computer do you recommend? And that would be illegal for him to answer that question. Or, you know, what's the cheapest long-distance phone company? Couldn't answer that either. Now, this is unbelievable what they're doing to people in jail. And in the case of minor threat, he wasn't even in jail for a computer-related offense, yet they still were able to ban him from the Internet for the whole period of his supervised release. Now, Kevin Mitnick, I don't see how he can ever get back on the net or be involved in any form with technology. And when you realize this is what these people do, this is what they are involved in, this is what they know. I mean, when you got out of prison, the first thing you did was get involved again and catch up to all the things you had missed.
Right.
You can't just take that out of somebody. You can't suck it out of them. That's exactly what they seem to be trying to do.
Well, how long is his supervised probation?
Well, I mean...
Have they said?
Seeing as how his prison term has no end in sight, I would imagine the supervised release probably would be about the same. You know,
probably going to be 3 to 5 years.
It'll probably be even longer than that, I would bet. The way they're going at it. Now, this is insane. I mean, people have to start saying something about this kind of nonsense. I mean, a lot of people feel like, you know, ignoring it because it's somebody in prison, so they don't count. But as we learned with you in prison, as we learned with Bernie S. in prison, the people there do count, and they do matter. They're people just like us. Increasingly, they're more and more of us. And I think what they are doing to people on supervised release... It's a good indication of what they like to do to a lot of us. And this whole thing with banning encryption, what do you think about that?
No,
banning encryption.
They're afraid that he'll attempt to do some of the other things that they won't let him do and then encrypt them.
But, I mean, he's not entitled to any privacy whatsoever. He can't write something private and encrypt it. He's not allowed to do that. That is something suspicious now. Never was before. I mean, you're allowed to encrypt things, are you
sure.
not? You encrypt things all the time.
Well, actually, I don't, but I could if I wanted to.
Well, every time you use SSH,
that's true.
Access 2600, you are encrypting something. He would not be allowed to do that.
Encrypt things. Yeah.
He would not be allowed to do that. And as has been said, PKZIP would be considered encryption because it's got an encryption. In fact, I guess WordPerfect would be too, right?
Yeah, it's got a feature.
Well, they cracked it on 60 Minutes pretty fast, didn't they?
Well,
yeah.
Anyway. What about an ATM? He's not allowed to use an ATM machine, is he?
I would not be surprised. Probably not. Probably not. And probably wouldn't be allowed to have credit cards.
No, because he needs a card. He needs an access code. to get the money. And he uses encryption.
What do you think is going through the judge's mind when they sentence somebody like this? What do they think this person is? Are they like watching, you know, too many science fiction TV shows? They think this person has all power and they can do anything with their hands?
I think maybe he read too many newspaper articles.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Newspaper articles, the media. What the media defines this as, people believe. When the Associated Press comes out with a story defining him as a certain type of person, people believe it. The judges see this kind of stuff. And it sticks with them.
If I had nothing else to go on except all that media attention, mm-hmm. and I was a judge,
right.
I would think we got to prevent this guy from going on another crime spree while he's out of prison.
Right. In reality, the only crimes he was committing was not being caught when he was out there and checking up on what people were doing as far as catching him or catching up to him. As far as I understand, that's it. Didn't sell anything, didn't damage anything, but they so fear his abilities or what he represents to other people that they're willing to completely destroy his life as a result. He's been in prison for over 2 years with no hope of getting out. Even for $1 million, they would not let him out. You know, they let terrorists out. They let murderers out. But they won't let him out for any reason whatsoever. It's a scary world. All right, well, I hope people spread the word about this. We'll be having more information up on our website as soon as we can get it up there and find more information, too. We'll also have a panel devoted to this at Beyond Hope in August in New York City. For information on that, www.hope.net. And I like to see a lot of people there getting woken up to this kind of abuse taking effect on a lot of us. All right, our phone number is 212-279-3400. And I guess we're just about ready to take some phone calls on this and other subjects. Anything exciting happened to you this week?
Ooh, anything exciting happened to me this week?
Or not exciting, that's, you know, of relevance.
Yeah, actually, concerning OmniPoint.
Oh, OmniPoint, yes, yeah. Our favorite,
mobile phone carrier.
GSM, I guess.
GSM, there you go.
The only one in New York City, I think, right?
Yeah,
that's true. Sprint PCS and AT&T's PCS are not GSM.
No, Sprint PCS is CDMA.
Okay.
So
what's up with OmniPoint?
I've been having, some peculiar problems recently, and I have not reported any problems in the past because I haven't had any.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not any really worth mentioning.
Except when they turned off your service on the air.
Oh, well, yeah. Had a few kinks, you know. What do you expect the first few weeks when, you know, they go on the air?
Right.
But, now recently, for some reason, my phone has been crashing repeatedly.
How's a phone crash?
Well, I call it crashing because it looks like, basically, you'll be sitting there,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden you'll hear the phone make a beep noise, and you'll notice that it's acting as if it was first turned on.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. That happened to me today. I was really? Using someone else's phone. I didn't know that's what happened. I was involved in something.
Right.
And I was you know, talking to a machine someplace.
Right.
I was hitting all the buttons, and all of a sudden, I heard a loud click.
Yeah.
And then three beeps, which indicated that a message was waiting or something like that.
Right.
Is that what happens? Does it say message received and three beeps? Is that what you're supposed
to... No. Message received?
Well, that's what it said on the phone when I started using it.
Yeah, and it means that a message is coming in.
Yeah, but it was the same message. It was like, gave me three beeps saying that the message was there. I don't know. What should it do when the phone reboots?
When you first turn it on, it asks you for a PIN if you protect your SIM card.
Okay, maybe that's not what happened then. Maybe it was something, some other problem.
Yeah. No, but, it acts as if... I haven't heard of this happening on any of the other phones except the Ericssons, which makes me kind of concerned.
Hmm.
The only thing I know of that's been different on OmniPoint's network over the past month or so is that they've increased the resolution of the sampling so that calls are supposed to be even clearer if your phone supports it. Mm-hmm. But mine does not. I have one of the first Ericsson GSM phones. Actually, it was probably the first Ericsson GSM phone that was available
mm-hmm.
in the U.S. And I don't know what it is, but for whatever reason, it's constantly resetting. I mean, it's not a lot, but the fact that it happens at all is noticeable.
Right.
It might happen once or twice in a day. And I don't know if it's related to something faulty in the phone. It might have absolutely nothing to do with OmniPoint whatsoever. So I'm not going to rule out the phone itself as the problem. But this has been troubling me lately. I'm not quite sure what to do about it.
You look troubled.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, let's probe the universe and see if we can find any answers. I guess we got late word that, I don't know if this is happening as we speak, but Microsoft is considering the purchase of CBS from Westinghouse. Now, don't they already have a share in NBC? Won't that be kind of a conflict of interest? That's kind of interesting. I don't know. Would you be more comfortable with the networks in the hands of something like Microsoft or something like a defense contractor? Well, I have to say Microsoft is a little better than a defense contractor because the movement of information is something that is a lot more important.
Yeah, but if I had to choose who is the more reliable company,
uh-huh.
If I knew that we... Okay, let's put it this way. If I had a missile, mm-hmm. and I was pointing my missile
right.
at some really, really bad dude,
uh-huh.
and parts in that missile were made by Westinghouse,
yeah.
okay, I'd feel good.
Well, okay.
Because I know that Westinghouse is a good, solid name.
Do you look,
now, on the other hand, though,
yes.
if I was pointing a missile at some really bad guy,
yeah.
and I knew that there were parts in that missile or software in that missile made by Microsoft,
right.
I would have a heart attack.
Yeah.
I'd run.
Well, that would be cause of concern to everybody, I think.
Yeah.
Anywhere near the thing. But do you look upon a TV network as a missile or as a means of communication?
Well, I look at it as a missile, like a missile, because it conveys something, and sometimes it packs a powerful punch.
When's the last time you used Westinghouse Explorer? You know.
Well,
come on, you need. You need somebody who doesn't have a vested interest in certain policy. I mean, yeah, obviously Microsoft has a vested interest, but I think they also have an understanding of what will happen to them if they censor things or prevent things from occurring. Whereas military contractors, I don't think they really are that worried about, you know, doing nasty things to people. It's just a thought.
Yeah, but I think with Westinghouse, the fact that they know they can do nasty things to people,
mm-hmm.
they might be less likely to want to do those things because they know they can do them anyway.
I don't know. Well, you know, it just worries me when you have Westinghouse running CBS, you have Mobil Oil running PBS, right? You have GE running NBC, you have Rupert Murdoch, who's the scariest of them all, running Fox, and then you got Disney running ABC, you know? I mean, whew, it scares me. So, I don't know. How bad could Microsoft be? Pacifica should be getting one of these networks, I think. That would be kind of fun. But that's something else. All right, 212-279-3400 is our telephone number. I have something playing on CD number 2. Listen to this. Can't hear it, can you?
No.
See, I picked up this Gateway 2000 CD-ROM, and I decided to play it on the air, see what would happen, and you don't hear anything.
I swear on old CD players, you'd hear crap.
You would?
Yeah.
Really?
Really old ones.
Well, I guess... Yeah, our new CD players are showing
yeah.
through their silence that they're very sophisticated. But I can tell you that it was exactly 47 minutes long, this Gateway 2000 CD-ROM.
Wow.
Whatever it's doing, it's playing. You know, it's definitely playing something, but you just don't hear anything. Kind of cool. Okay, 212-279-3400. Let's take our first phone call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Well, I'd just like to know what exactly...
Turn down your radio.
Okay, hold on.
Turn down your radio because it's very confusing.
Okay, I just like to know
yes.
what I heard that Kevin Mitnick was charged with possession of a cellular phone. I mean, like that he was breaking into, like he was stealing cellular phone calls.
He was charged with possession of a pair, an ESN min pair, which would enable you to actually use somebody else's cellular phone service to make a phone call.
Well, wasn't he charged with possession of many pairs?
Well, I think it was reduced to one charge, which is 15 or more.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's what he was charged with, plus a charge of violating supervised release.
Okay, and one more question. What's the mailing list for the Beyond Hope Network?
Okay, if you want information on Beyond Hope, what you do is you send mail to Major Domo, that's MAJORDOMO, at 2600.com. And in the first line of the message, not the title, the first line of the message, you simply write, subscribe, space, Beyond Hope. Beyond Hope being one word. and send that away, and you'll be subscribed to a lot of conversation about the Beyond Hope conference. Yeah, it tends to veer off in many different directions, but you know that's basically the totally non-moderated, anybody says whatever they want to say group for Beyond Hope. We have a bunch of other lists that are working very hard on specific things, and we have a lot of very interesting things planned for that weekend. It takes place August 8th, 9th, and 10th at the Puck Building in New York City. And if you want more information, visit our website, www.hope.net. Or you can call our voicemail, 516-473-2626. And I think it's option number 3. I'm not sure about that, though. Look around for information on Beyond Hope, and that'll tell you everything you need to know. All right, 212-279-3400. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, Emmanuel.
Oh, that's pretty loud there.
Okay. I just want to take this time to thank everybody who's been sending me emails.
Did he sound like Rebel at first? It sounded like somebody else.
It sounded like somebody completely different.
Really?
Are you calling me?
Do you have a secretary? No, it sounded like somebody was announcing your call, and then you start, you unless your voice was totally different at first.
Oh. Well, anyway, I just want to thank everybody who's been emailing me. I will be giving out my email address, by the way. Who's been emailing me.
We were worried that might not happen this week.
Everybody from all over the country I've been getting email from. I've been getting email from California, West Virginia. I've been getting email from Chicago, Texas.
I'm surprised it's limited by the borders of our country.
No, it's not, because I've been getting email from Australia, too.
Australia, there you go. There you go. Email from Australia.
Yeah, and if anybody wants to email me, they can email me at rebel@escape.com. That's ESCAPE.com.
What do these people say to you when they email you?
Oh, different things. I mean,
I would imagine.
I'm not going to get into it.
I would imagine quite a few different things.
Discussing hacking websites, I have a website. Instead of people hacking websites like the Pentagon and the Defense Department, they should hack things like racist websites, such as, I'll give you a website.
Okay.
www.natall.com. That's natall.com. That stands for National Alliance. That's N as in Nancy, A-T-A-L-L like Larry, .com. Or they have another website, natvan.com. That's all one word, natvan.com. It's the National Alliance. I think people should hack that website.
Okay, well, you see, the thing is, you really should not be saying, target this particular group and cause them grief. Because I think that's, you know, that's not really very responsible to do. I'm not going to lose any sleep over racist groups having their websites hacked. I'm not going to lose any sleep over any governmental site having their websites hacked. Because, hey, you know, they're in the public eye already. And it's, you know, people do want to convey messages sometimes. And if they don't have their security up to speed, then, you know, they sort of get what's coming to them. And it's really not something that causes a whole lot of damage if they know what they're doing. If they don't, you know, it could be kind of pricey, I guess.
Well, I just want to say also that I think that those people shouldn't be on the Internet. I mean, but that's my opinion. If you want to email me.
It's interesting. It's interesting because Indonesia, another Indonesian governmental site, got hacked yesterday, in fact. We got some mail on it. I don't have the exact address with me, but they had a link to us, except it didn't go to us. It went back to them, and they sent us an apology later saying, we're sorry the link was broken, but next time the link will work, and you know, they'll link to 2600 magazine from the hacked Indonesian site. But more importantly, we want Indonesia out of East Timor, and you know, we're willing to do whatever it takes to get them out of there. You know, I think that's important to convey a political message. Now, supposing Native Americans conveyed a message and put it right smack on the Department of the Interior's webpage or something like that, or the Treasury Department or the White House. They put something on there telling thousands of people who they could never have told before about the oppression of Native Americans in this country and about, you know, how things should be different. Some facts that they never would have an opportunity to get out to the public. I mean, I think that would be great. I think it would be great if gay and lesbian groups got onto the White House and put something there and just shocked America. Because we're always so afraid of shocking people. We're always so afraid of offending that farmer in Ohio with things that he might not agree with. Well, you know, we see things we don't agree with all the time, and we live with it. Right, Rebel?
Yeah, that's correct. I agree. But
you see things you don't agree with all the time, don't you?
Well, I agree with most of what you're saying. But did you know that you can make free...
Somehow disturbed by that, but okay, yeah, go ahead.
You can make free phone calls by using the carrier access code 102110, which is Frontier, and bill it to a third number. You can do this on payphones. They will not call for acceptance. And you can still make those directory assistance calls from TDD phones.
I see. Now, of course, if you have third number billing blocked on your phone line, this will not work, right?
Right.
Okay, so I think that's something that many people need to do.
Well, what if you do get third number calls?
Well, there's really no good reason to do that. There's really no good reason to have third number billing active on your line. And if you call 9X and tell them, hey, I don't want this, then it's 9X's responsibility to take it off.
But also, you can make free directory assistance calls by billing that to another number. Have the 9X operator call the 800-855-1155 TDD number for AT&T.
Right.
Go to any TDD payphone. They're in the Empire State Building, they're in the Trade Center, and they're in the 9X payment centers. And just
all of which are having new cameras installed as of tonight. Thank you very much. Okay, listen, we got to move on to another phone call, but I'm sure you've given us many handy tips for all kinds of criminal endeavors that will be taking place from this point on. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi, how you doing?
Very good. You know, 1 second, let me shut my radio.
Yeah, shut your radio down. Always keep your radio near your phone, too.
I have to say that Rebel is really the most annoying person on the planet. I hope you guys agree.
I've met many people in my time. I don't know. I have to think about that.
He's up there, I got to say. And I really like the system you had of not taking him as the first phone call. I wish you could just block him entirely.
Well, 9X has invented many interesting things, but they have not invented anything that can do that yet.
We don't have a Rebel blocker yet.
Yeah.
My question was about 9X. I was using a payphone today. And I called an 800 number, and I was able to check my voicemail. And, you know, I had a lot of voicemail messages, and everything was fine. And then I tried to check another voicemail number I have using an AT&T corporate calling card.
And said no additional dialing allowed.
Yeah,
right?
What's up with that?
What's up with that is 9X are a bunch of idiots that for some reason have put a restriction on how many touchtones you can hit on their payphones. It's so annoying. If you have to check voicemail, if you have to make a phone call through another company, or use anything involving touchtones, you'll find yourself cut off. I don't know what they're trying to do. They're just trying to make people destroy 9X payphones for them. Maybe they're trying to get rid of them all or something.
But why
like
does
that.
It work if I just call a regular 800 number and it doesn't work if I go through AT&T?
They have certain limits based on the type of call that you make. And in there might be an answer as to how to defeat it. I'm sure you'll hit the limit no matter what kind of a phone call you make at some point. But they might have something where if you call an 800 number, you get an additional 10 digits. If you call a carrier access code number, you only get an additional 3, or maybe, you know, 20 or something. I guess the best thing to do is come up with some scientific data that is write down what happens with a certain type of call, how many touchtones you get. We might be able to figure out this thing, you know, from that.
I get so frustrated. I call the operator immediately, and she immediately says I have to, you know, talk to someone in repair.
This is what you do, and I advise everybody out there to do this. Call repair, get a specific phone number, adopt a payphone, okay? Take a certain payphone that you like on a corner, okay, and call it your payphone, and do not rest until they fix that payphone. Call 611 every day if necessary and say, this thing's cutting off touchtones after this amount. You know, this is not acceptable. If they say they can't fix it, call back and talk to somebody else. Eventually, you will get somebody who will admit it's a software setting within the phone that can be altered, that can be changed. And every single one of your calls will go on record. And if they get, you know, 100 phone calls for a certain phone being broken, it's going to mean something to somebody.
You know, I also noticed that the payphones around Grand Central Station and Port Authority act differently. Some won't even take a 1-800-CALL-ATT type of call. They just send it back, or you have to call up an operator and actually have a human being put the call through for you.
Well, what does it do? These are 9X phones, right?
Yeah.
What exactly happens?
I haven't tried it in like a month or two, but last time I was around Penn Station, I would try and place a call through 1-800-CALL-ATT, and just it wouldn't be connected. Nothing would happen. Just silence. And I tried a couple different phones, too.
That's very strange. That I don't know.
So then I called up, you know, I just hit zero, and I told the operator to put me through to AT&T, and so, you know, she did it, but that cost 9X even more money. to have a human being do that.
You have to also make sure, though, when you get connected in that way, that a charge somehow isn't passed on to you. Obviously, when you're using a payphone, it's not. But sometimes if you're at your home phone and you use an operator, they can tack on a charge. Mm-hmm. I understand AT&T also is trying to throw, I think they've already done this, a 35-cent surcharge on top of all their other charges for using a payphone and a calling card at the same time.
Really?
I don't know what they're thinking. I mean, I use I think I use this about every company, but one of the companies that I use that isn't so bad right now is Sprint, because they have a calling card that's only 25 cents a minute around the clock, no surcharge.
Hmm.
And that's not bad for a calling card. You know, you could do a lot better. There's really no reason to charge you more. There's no additional effort involved for them making a phone call when it's 10 cents a minute from your house or 25 cents a minute from a calling card. And it really isn't any. So hopefully that will come down. But as far as AT&T and other companies go, it's very far away from the prices they're charging.
It's so frustrating not to be able to make a call.
Oh, I've seen businessmen, suits and ties, in fist fights with 9X payphones.
That's probably me.
Well, it's something to see.
On the,
I have a couple of pictures, actually. A
couple of things that you mentioned about Microsoft. First of all, the CBS story was reported by the New York Post, so I think we have to really take it easy on, you know, how accurate that story is going to be.
Okay.
And number two is, to their credit, at least the bug that brought down Microsoft.com, the one like 10 days ago, a patch was posted about 6 hours later, so it wasn't, you know, exactly, you know, it's a bad bug, but at least they fixed it within a couple hours, so can't kill them on that one.
Okay.
But, just wanted to give my 2 cents worth.
All right. Well, thanks for calling.
Have a good one.
I think in a way, Microsoft is kind of, they're traveling down the same road we are, and we're sort of hoping, well, they are. They're going down the information superhighway, except they're driving like a tractor and plowing things up as they go. And we're just sort of walking around, trying not to get run over. How's that for an analogy? But, you know, I don't know. In some way, I just feel that they might listen a little more to us. Maybe I'm just being foolishly optimistic here, but I just think, like, for instance, like AOL, I think they're, you know, hopeless. Gone, totally. Microsoft, there might still be some chance for redemption. It's just a thought.
I can't believe you're saying that.
Oh, look, I'm just theorizing. I think it's possible. What, do you think Apple is completely out of touch with reality?
Close to it. Not as far gone as Microsoft.
No.
But okay, pretty far gone.
I agree with that, but you still think there's hope for redemption for Apple, don't you?
A very small one.
I'm in that
I'm giving
position.
Them one more chance.
All right, I'm at that position with Microsoft. One more chance for them.
I gave up on them a long time ago.
All right, well, we'll see. All right, one more call. Good evening, you're on the air. Yeah, speak up. Okay. No foolishness here. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi. Earlier you said that people using their cell phones while they're driving causes more accidents than DWI. Was that just an exaggeration, or?
I've heard that said in newspaper reports. Various people that claim to know what they're talking about. and I think I saw it in the New York Times. I can't swear that I did, but I believe, maybe not as far as fatal accidents, but as far as fender benders, you know, accidents in total, I think things, distractions of that sort play a bigger role.
Now, what does the insurance company say about this?
I'm sure they're not too pleased about it, and I'm sure they're you know, going to pass through some sort of legislation that says if you're on a cellular phone, get into an accident, we don't have to pay as much or something like that.
Right.
And I'm sure if you're cruising the web, that's not going to do much for you either.
Sure. Okay.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for calling. And we are out of time. So that brings another exciting edition of Off the Hook to a close. We'll be keeping track of the Mitnick case and other developments in the freedom of speech arena in the weeks ahead. So until next week, this is Manuel Goldstein for Fiber Optic. Have a good night.
No!
words from Mamiya 2, and even a spoken word, hip-hop, and music from Mamiya Abu-Jamal. Wednesday, July 16th, 7 to 9 p.m. at the New Eurekan Poets Cafe, 236 East 3rd Street between Avenues B and C. All proceeds will go towards Mamiya's legal and political defense, featuring poets Jessica Caramore, Sharif Simmons, Tracy Morris, Reggie Kabiko, and...